Gross domestic product, y'all know, right? So let's try a new one. Gross domestic income. GDP and GDI on the program today from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Thursday today, the 25th of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody. All right, so look, there are days, of which this is obviously going to be one, spoiler alert, where we get a little down in it, a little weedy, a tad wonky, but in a good way. The headline economic news of this Thursday, if perchance you haven't heard it yet, is that in the second quarter, the American economy, the measurement is gross domestic product, right, GDP, shrank just a teensy bit less than we had been thinking it did. Still shrank, though, 0.6% negative growth in Q2, annualized versus 0.9% at the first guess last month. But the subhead, if you will, of today's macroeconomic headline is that another measure of this economy, also out this morning, gross domestic income, says the economy hasn't been shrinking at all. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has today's What the What?
Okay, I am on my way to the deli down the street. Could I get a coffee?
Yes, a small, medium, or large?
Let's make it a large.
So it'll be $2.
$2.
Thank you.
Awesome, thanks a lot. You too. Now, if somebody wanted to calculate how much economic activity happened in the deli just now, you could ask, how much did I spend?
$2.
Or you could ask, how much did the deli take in? How much did it earn?
$2, please.
They should be the same.
So $2, please.
Customer spending is the deli's income. Two ways to measure economic activity, two sides of the same coin. Extrapolate this through the whole economy, and you have got two ways to measure the whole economy. Measure all the spending, and you call it GDP.
Consumer spending, business investment, residential investment, looking at what the government's spending.
Michael Pierce is a senior U.S. economist at Capital Economics. Now, if instead you measure not the spending, but all the income in the country, people, businesses, governments, you call that gross domestic income, GDI.
These should get to the same answer because everything that's being spent is another person's income.
But guess what? They don't. They're spitting out totally different answers.
The economy looks completely different depending on whether you look at the GDP or the GDI figures.
According to income, the economy's overheating. According to spending, it looks like a recession.
Pretty big difference.
Jonathan Pingle is chief U.S. economist at UBS. He says there is, in general, a reason why these two measures of the economy can be different sometimes.
Well, we measure them from different sources. Many of these data sources are not comprehensive.
Different surveys, different documents, different times data gets reported. But this doesn't really account for just how off these two numbers are right now. With more time and more updated data, we might get some answers. For now, it is an economic puzzle. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, puzzle or no, wasn't nobody waiting for Jay Powell's big speech tomorrow. We've told you that's coming, right? Traders were looking for a reason to buy. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. I know y'all are sick and tired of hearing me talk about inflation. Believe me when I tell you I am sick and tired of hearing myself talk about it, too. But just because we're sick and tired of it doesn't mean it's not news. From the Commerce Department, tomorrow morning will come the July edition of the Personal Consumption Expenditures Price Index. That is, as you have heard here and elsewhere, the Fed's favorite measure of rising prices. And while the central bank tries to do what it can about inflation, there is some research being done about why prices started going up in the first place. The latest is from an economist at the New York Fed, as Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genza reports.
The theory is laid out in a blog post on the New York Fed's website written by one of its economists. It says 60% of U.S. inflation from 2019 to 2021 was due to the jump in demand for stuff, while 40% was caused by supply-side kinks.
Those numbers pass the smell test, certainly.
That's Sarah House, a senior economist with Wells Fargo.
the supply chain constraints that we're seeing wouldn't have been so overwhelming and so inflationary if you didn't have consumer demand continuing to roar.
House says suppliers, facing shipping delays and staffing shortages, fell behind that surging demand. Stephen Cicchetti, an economics professor at Brandeis, says workers demanded higher wages and companies raised their prices to cover those bigger paychecks.
Well, it's certainly going to be a big contributor to inflation, right? Because you have to raise wages and that raises costs.
The blog post says without all those supply chain kinks, we would have had 6% inflation at the end of last year instead of 9%. The blog ends on an optimistic note, saying we could see a substantial drop in inflation if supply chain bottlenecks continue to loosen up. University of North Carolina economist Camelia Cunin isn't so sure, though, because inflation expectations have become ingrained. She says workers will keep demanding higher pay.
Firms are going to therefore have to pay the higher wages and increase prices of goods to be able to pay those higher wages. And so we'll have inflation continue to be high.
Cunin says it'll be up to the Federal Reserve to tamp down those inflation expectations by showing it's willing to keep raising interest rates to cool off the economy. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Inflation being what it is, and before you at me, yes, I know this is me talking about it again, but inflation being inflation, people are tightening their belts. And the first thing to go for a whole lot of us, that HBO Max or Netflix or Hulu or Disney Plus subscription. I think we told you about this the other day, that almost one in five streaming service subscribers, 19%, have canceled three or more subscriptions in the past 2 years. Not great, right? If you're running a streaming service. Hollywood, though, has a plan for itself. Theme parks and live events. Alex Weperin is a media and business writer at The Hollywood Reporter. Alex, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to jump straight to the bottom of this article. There is a great graphic which shows Disney and Comcast, which is Universal, obviously, theme park revenues, both in the before time and then in the pandemic, and then in the aftertimes. And it's almost a straight plunge down when the pandemic hits. And now, kind of amazingly, it's bouncing back up. First of all, everybody thought this was going to happen, right? Pent-up entertainment demand?
Yeah, and in certain respects, everyone was kind of predicting this would happen. But to actually see it happen and see the results and how quickly things came back is kind of amazing, especially because international visitors who used to make up a huge portion of theme park visitors, they're still like less than half of what they were before the pandemic.
Okay, so here's why it matters in an interview about streaming, and that is this. If you're Netflix, and we all know it's having problems and streamers are having problems all over the place, but if you're Bob Chapek at Disney or the guy running NBC Universal, you've got some protection for streaming challenges, shall we say, and that's all in the theme parks and live events.
Yeah, I mean, look, streaming has a couple of problems right now, and that is, you know, on the one hand, advertisers are beginning to get concerned about where things are going, so they're beginning to kind of pull back a little bit. And if, in the case of Netflix and streaming services, subscriptions are beginning to kind of flatline a little bit. But the thing is, live events, theme parks, the demand is so pent up that they're just not seeing any hit right now whatsoever.
And more to the point, they've got some pricing power. I don't know exactly what the dollar amount is, but I know it's a really big one. The latest Disney season pass ticket costs are just, oh my.
Yeah, I mean, a typical trip for a family to a Disney theme park or a Universal theme park, you're looking at thousands and thousands of dollars. And in the case of ticket sales, not only do you have the admission tickets to the theme park, but these companies use the pandemic to kind of develop these new upsells.
Go into that upsell thing a little bit, because it's not just back at when my kids were little. It's not just like you hustle around to get a fast pass, right? I mean, these are actual things you have to buy and spend money on.
So Disney actually eliminated the fast pass altogether, and they replaced it with something called Genie Plus and Lightning Lanes. Now, every attendee at a Disney park has to pay $10 to $15 per person extra on top of their ticket price, just for the privilege of kind of reserving a time to go to one of their favorite rides.
Right.
And the same thing applies to their annual passes, which they kind of completely revamped Whereas before, if you had a Disney annual pass, you could go any day, anytime you wanted. You could pop over for lunch.
Yeah.
Now you have to reserve a visit well ahead of time, and they frequently sell out.
So what do you do if you're Ted Sarandos running Netflix and you don't have the live and or theme park option and you're seeing your numbers and then you look at the flip side of the coin and you're like, oh, man, those guys, what am I going to do?
So Netflix is actually exploring live events right now.
Uh-huh.
They've kind of soft launched a Stranger Things thing in New York City.
Oh, wow.
There's a Bridgerton live experience in Los Angeles. There's a Squid Game experience coming to New York. It's obviously not at the same scale as the theme parks, which can hold tens of thousands of people every single day. But it is kind of a first step in that direction.
Hmm.
And the other thing they can do, of course, is to license that IP that they've developed to theme park operators and develop theme park or live event content related to it.
So you're thinking like a Squid Game thing in Universal?
It's certainly possible.
Wow.
Universal has a Halloween event called Halloween Horror Nights that is very adult themed, and it wouldn't be out of place to have something like that there. So, you know, it's definitely an option for them.
What about you? Is it an option for you?
I don't know if I would do it, but maybe I'd consider it depending on what it was. As long as I could walk out of it, okay.
Right. Fair enough. Alex Wepper, and he covers media and business at the Hollywood Reporter. Alex, thanks a bunch. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up.
Most of the paper hangers are getting old and gray, like me.
Oh, come on. Age is only a number, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 322 today, 322 points, nearly 1%, 33,291. The NASDAQ advanced 207 points. That is 1.6%, 12,639. S&P 500 up 58, 1.4%, 41.99 there. We are all about the hardware today. Sony has raised its recommended price for the PlayStation 5 game console in the UK, Europe, Japan, China, Australia, Mexico, and Canada, not in the US of A. Sony cites, yes, of course, inflation and what it calls also, this is interesting, adverse currency trends. The dollar is super strong right now. Sony rose 1.3%. NVIDIA makes computer GPUs, graphics processing units. Yesterday, it reported earnings that were shy of expectations. Today, shares lifted 4% because capitalism. Apple, speaking of capitalism, set out invites for a September 7th launch event. New iPhone 14, new Apple Watch, AirPods. Who knows? Maybe they're doing an airport too. I don't know. AirPods. Apple added about 1.5% today. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We have talked a lot about housing affordability on this program and the affordability crisis that housing is in right now. Home prices, especially in the hottest coastal and urban markets, have been going up double digits because there aren't enough new homes being built. And so families that are finally ready to look for a first home found out they are flat out priced out. Not to be overlooked on the list of reasons why. Mortgage rates, which were right around 3% at the beginning of the year, 5.55% today. That's the average for a 30-year fixed, says Freddie Mac. And that has pushed a key indicator of housing affordability, sometimes called the monthly nut, way up, as Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman explains.
According to the Mortgage Bankers Association, the average monthly payment on a new mortgage in July was $1,844. That's $461 a month more than it was back in December before mortgage rates started going up. But something slightly good has happened recently, says MBA economist Edward Seiler.
In the last 2 months, the affordability was above where it has been.
Mortgage rates have fallen back by about 0.5% from their peak in June. Meanwhile, people's wages keep rising. So home affordability, a ratio of average income to average monthly mortgage payment, has improved slightly.
The payments were down by over $40 or so in the last month.
And there could be a bit of light on the horizon, says Lawrence Yoon at the National Association of Realtors. He predicts with the downturn in the housing market, annual home price increases will slow to about 5% by year's end. And
the fact that mortgage rate may have already peaked and beginning to stabilize, maybe this is a hopeful sign that affordability will no longer worsen.
Meanwhile, anyone who did buy a home recently is stuck with a pretty high monthly payment now. And that doesn't feel so great, says Bryce Colburn at U.S. News & World Report, which surveyed new homeowners.
40% say they felt pressure to buy their first home due to steadily increasing home prices. 35% wish that they had bought earlier.
While nearly half wished they'd waited until home prices come down, if that ever happens. Home buying, it's a crapshoot for sure. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
I'm going to fire up an inflation calculator as a way to set up this next story. The Department of Labor's got a good one based on the Consumer Price Index. And if you get that one going and put 2015 as the start year, $478 as the amount, in 2022 dollars, that $478 becomes $594.25. Now, on the face of it, that's not a whole lot of money. But imagine you're a teacher, not making a whole lot of money to begin with. And that $478 teachers were spending on classroom supplies back in 2015, that's the latest year we have data for, out of their own pockets, by the way, that becomes $594 and change this year. And that, I mean, well, come on, it stings a little bit, right? About 94% of public school teachers, federal data tells us, do in fact spend out of pocket for supplies they use on the job. So this year, with inflation being what it is, teachers are going to have to spend more or get less or ask for help. Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes covers education for us.
When New York City teacher Andy Young gets his preschoolers ready for nap time, he transforms his public school classroom into a kind of blue-green cave. He says the glow from the new colored lanterns helps his four-year-old students feel calm.
One of them likes to just stare at it during nap time. And I think it helps her go to sleep because she does go to sleep.
Young bought the lanterns himself, along with new picture books, folders, and a home for the class's pet spider called a cobweb castle.
I did have a spider that we caught outside in the playground in here. It made its home in here, laid a few egg sacs, and it escaped.
Young spent $200 on that and the other materials, preparing for the upcoming school year. His district does have a budget for supplies, but he would have to go through an approved vendor website.
Materials and supplies on the website is very limited. So if I wanted something like this cobweb castle, I would never be able to get it.
Young also says it can take months for things to arrive through the approved website. For example, he ordered mats for the kids to nap on in February that didn't show up until June. So he just buys stuff himself. Sometimes he's reimbursed, but sometimes not. Marguerite Rosa is director of the Edunomics Lab at Georgetown. She says districts could put more funding towards supplies, but often there's pressure to put it towards teachers' salaries.
When there is new money for the following year, there is a heavy push to put that into labor. We'll see collective bargaining say we should give that out for raises or hiring new staff, and the supply bill gets squeezed.
It may be squeezed even more this year with high inflation. Prices for things like notebooks, glue, and labels are up 11% from a year ago. Nationally, elementary school teachers use more of their own money on average than middle or high school teachers. Educators in schools with more low-income kids spend more, too. Over at Lakeshore Learning, a teaching supply store north of Baltimore, the business is experiencing one of its busiest weeks of the year. When shoppers enter the store, they're hit with an onslaught of primary colors and 20% off signs. They can buy everything from tiny wooden chairs to a small toy cash register, which is fittingly located next to the real one. Outside the store, I stopped Bria Hamm, a public school teacher in Baltimore, who showed off her purchases.
I bought a number chart for my kids. I teach second grade. For my first starters, like fat pencils, fat crayons.
Hamm says her school district provides regular crayons and pencils, but the fat ones are easier for tiny hands to grip. She's spent $35 so far and is buying less than she might have in previous years.
Prices are higher. This is the first year I actually did a wish list as well to try to get outside help of materials that I need. Just basic materials like Kleenex tissues.
Hamm's wish list is online, and she says many of her friends and family members have bought things for her classroom. Other teachers use crowdfunding sites. Donors Choose is a nonprofit platform specifically designed for educators, and it's seen requests nearly double from this time a year ago. Despite the high prices, Hamm says buying things for her classroom is a good investment.
While we are there, it is our home, so if I have to spend money for it to be an inviting space for them to feel safe, to feel comfortable, and to want to learn, then that's just what I'm going to do because it's my space too.
Hamm says both she and her students spend lots of time in the classroom, and they're all more likely to be good at their jobs if they like the workspace. In Baltimore, I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
First-time jobless claims dropped once again today, a little bit. Another indicator that on a macro level, the labor market in this economy is still real, real tight. It's real tight on a micro level, too, as you're going to hear in today's installment of our series, My Economy.
My name is Bruce Ridenour, and I'm in Danbury, Connecticut, and I'm a wall covering contractor. My father was a painting and decorating contractor, and he also did wallpaper, and then my older brother became a wall covering contractor several years before I got involved, and I started working underneath him in 1982. I was in my early 20s and kind of floundering around trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. Not that I was trying to figure that out. I think most people fall into it, and that's exactly what I did. I kind of fell into it. It's been very, very busy, and I see it getting busier. I guess it started picking up a little bit 2 years ago, but up until about the first of this year, it really still wasn't that busy. And then right about the beginning of January, the phone calls started coming in multiple times a week, people looking for somebody to hang wallpaper in their house. And I have been working almost exclusively wallpaper jobs since the early part of this year. There's not a lot of guys in the trade. A number of them have either left the area, left the trade. So as the work comes more and more faster and faster, it just comes more and more to those of us who are left. Most of the paper hangers are getting old and gray, like me. I think the youngest paper hanger that I know of, I want to say he's in his early 50s, maybe his late 40s. I mean, right now there's so much work going on that we're all overwhelmed, and people call and they want me to do a quote, whatever. I can get them a quote, and some of them want me to come right away, and it's like I can't. And she said, "Well, do you know anybody else?" I said, "Well, I do, but they're just as busy as I am." So it's a situation where you kind of have to sit and wait. I'm 62 years old now. Not sure how much longer I can keep this up. And it is a very physical business. I at the top of a ladder, stretching up to the ceiling, and then the next moment I'm down on my hands and knees, trimming paper at the baseboard. I see myself being able to work at this for maybe another 5 or 6 years. I'd really like to see some young people take on the business. It does take a little while to develop a good paper hanger. I can see wallpapering coming back very strong in the same way that it was in the 50s and the 60s. Even to a point where a lot of people are going to have whole houses full of wallpaper again.
Bruce Ridenour, he's in Danbury, Connecticut, hanging paper. Hey, do us a favor, would you? Let us know how things are going with you. There's a space you can do that at marketplace.org/myeconomy. This final note on the way out today, which is, I believe, the most recent sign the apocalypse is upon us, or perhaps the latest entry in the what could possibly go wrong sweepstakes, saw this the other day, that MGM Television, owned by Amazon, is coming out with a new show called Ring Nation, which will show videos captured by people's Ring video doorbells and home cameras. You know what else Amazon owns? Ring. Corporate synergy, am I right? All right, here is your moment of economic context as we leave you. The Department of Energy was out with its monthly report on electricity generation in this economy yesterday. In June, solar power generation was up 30% from a year ago. Now totals almost 6% of U.S. total energy production. Wind up 20% to 10.5% of total U.S. electricity production. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Rick Carr, Diane Parker, Amanda Peacher, and Stephanie Sieg are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.